So we're talking with Toby Usnick, who is the head of sustainability at Christie's, about their initiative to launch a new CSR program in that organization. So, Toby, welcome.
Thank you very much, Eben and Rochelle. So if it's all right with everyone, I will do a quick overview of the CSR program that we put in place here at Christie's over the past year and how we structured it and where we hope to head with it. And then we can open up to a dialogue with a moderated dialogue with Rochelle. I also just want to acknowledge my colleague Caitlin Norris is in the audience. She is our program officer at Christie's, and the two of us are a two-person global team with the CSR responsibility, and it's been an exciting collaboration for us. Quick background for you is that before starting the CSR program here, I was the head of corporate communications for 7 years. So I've been at Christie's for 8 years. Before that, I've had corporate communications experience at the New York Times Company and at American Express. And one last thing I should note up front is we have a fantastic Bard MBA student, Marin Demise, in our services this spring. She's a great addition to the CSR team here at Christie's, and I want to do a shout out to her now. With that said, we started a year ago, and my CEO, Stephen Murphy, asked me to create a CSR program at Christie's. He had seen what I've done in various elements of my corporate communications role here and thought that it would bode well for a comprehensive commitment to CSR. He asked me to lead the charge, which I've happily done. It's been really fun building the program that I'm about to share with you all. And what I've learned loud and clearly with CSR and frankly with life is dialogue is what makes anything stronger. So I welcome this call, and before, during, and after, we'll have any questions you want. For those in the audience who I can't hear or speak with today, just know that if you Google Christie's and CSR, you'll find Caitlin's and my contact information, and we're always keen to hear from people about how we're doing. So a year ago when we started this CSR program, we knew that we needed to do extensive dialogue or a listening tour with both our employees and with outside practitioners of CSR if we wanted to do something that was meaningful and something that would be efficient. We knew we didn't need to reinvent the wheel, that there are a lot of great corporations that have done CSR long before we've gotten into it, and that if our employees don't care about it, then we might as well not do it, because at the end of the day, brands are built from the inside out, and if employees care about CSR, we can't really hope to affect change. So with that sort of mindset, we started to have these dialogues at various group meetings and offsites and one-on-one conversations with all different levels of employees in all different regions of the world and all different departments. And we continue to do that, and we'll continue to do that. Similarly, we started to have conversations with heads of CSR from Goldman Sachs, American Express, Hershey, Danone, Tata Group, a whole host of organizations that we knew we could learn from because they had tread a path that we were about to and had that kind of experience. We codenamed our program Art and Soul when we were talking to people about it because we didn't want to name it until we knew what our colleagues felt right for them. And as we talked about Art and Soul more and more, everyone said, well, that is it. You know, we are an art business. We are transactionally driven, but we are ultimately in a relationship business. And if we can take and add a little bit more meaning to our transactions, to the art that we're dealing with, then that soulful piece that we bring in will make for a stronger organization. So with that as our sort of code name and now official name of CSR at Christie's, we, through extensive dialogue, came up with our mission and vision. Some of you on the call may have seen this or heard this already. If not, I'll just say it briefly. The mission is to enhance the communities in which we live and work through cultural stewardship and arts advocacy. And the vision is to preserve, protect, and promote art in our communities while strategically manning the cultural, economic, and environmental impact of our activities. I'll repeat both of those just because that's what we're here to talk about. The mission is to enhance the communities in which we live and work through cultural stewardship and arts advocacy. And the vision is to preserve, protect, and promote art in our communities while strategically managing the cultural, economic, and environmental impact of our activities. And then within those, that mission and vision, we focused on four pillars of our practice. One is what we at Christie's call cultural stewardship, which is how we transit great works of art from one caretaker to the next, something we've been doing for 250 years. And that means, are we transparent and as responsible legally, ethically, morally in everything from antiquities that may have recently been looted from Arab Spring countries to artworks that may have been looted by the Nazis during World War II era, to how are we shipping things, and how are we really doing our due diligence? Are we facilitating money laundering or not? So that broadest sense of cultural stewardship means moving artworks, transiting great works of art in as responsible way as possible. The second pillar is philanthropy, which is very consistent with many multinational corporations. The third pillar is volunteerism, or what we call employee engagement. And the fourth pillar is sustainability, how our activities are impacting the environment and the workplace. So again, cultural stewardship, philanthropy, employee engagement, and sustainability. Let me take a pause there and make sure that I'm being heard clearly and see if anything is problematic.
You're coming out loud and clear.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. So with that quick overview, I'll give you a couple examples of some of the things we've been up to in the past year with the four areas, the four pillars. What I would note is, because we are a business, we want to integrate the CSR practices into the business process as much as we can. Actually, the sun is about to hit me directly in the eyes. I'm going to close my blind. One second. Excuse me. In the area of cultural, well, broadly speaking, that means we're trying to get our colleagues across the business to know about us, what we're about, and to actually start to think about their activities vis-a-vis CSR. So I'm very quick to tell my colleagues, and Caitlin and I are very quick to tell our colleagues when we meet with them, a couple things. One, we are not grabbing your budget. We're not grabbing your headcount. What we're here to do is to just play a role of an air traffic controller almost. It's important for us to know what aircraft Christie's has in the CSR air at any moment in time, whether it's what we're doing with shipping crates or what we're doing with antique rhino horn, which is an issue in terms of African rhino and poaching, what we're doing with how we're treating women in the workplace, if there's a glass ceiling and so forth. And then it's to be able to report back to our own employees first and foremost, but to the degree it's appropriate to outside questioners about our CSR activities. So we're not, again, grabbing people's budget headcount. We just want to know where we are on any of these four pillars at any moment in time so we can report on it and now start to measure it, track it, and then hopefully improve upon measures in year two. And then the other thing we try and help people think about is if you can envision a bullseye. In the bullseye, in the center, we have what is the workplace. That's why we Christie's come together each day. And we want to make sure that we're helping raise the level of awareness amongst our employees about the impact of our activities on each other in that bullseye. Then the next outer circle of the bullseye is the marketplace. So again, we're trying to help our colleagues raise their awareness about the impact of our activities on the marketplace, on our clients, on our partners, in the communities in which we live and work. And then the last third outer circle of that bullseye is the environment. So what's the impact of our activities on the environment, again, from shipping crates to miles flown, carbon offsets, and so forth. And we can come back to all that in the Q&A process. But I will give you a quick couple of examples of things we're looking at or have been working on in the past year. And I say we in the broadest sense because Caitlin and I are a two-person department, but we rely on the kindness of our colleagues who are in all kinds of departments and geographies to help us execute and at a minimum begin to measure where we are on these four pillars. So under cultural stewardship, it's big and small. We as a company, for example, are starting to put together a series of panel discussions that we're doing around the world with different clients and different institutions about broadly speaking, cultural stewardship and about philanthropy. So, for example, we've had panel discussions in Hong Kong and in Delhi and in Beijing and in Seattle about effective philanthropy and what works, what doesn't work, about cultural stewardship. How does someone who built a great art collection or cares about a great cause such as the environment, how do they get their children to care about it? How do they pass that legacy along? And what we've done is, to, in the sort of thought leadership category, is brought together thought leaderships in those areas, such as Susan and David Rockefeller in Beijing, talking about cultural stewardship and how they approach their philanthropy and their environmental activism, to a panel we did in Seattle with a collector and three heads of organizations, the Paul Allen Foundation, the Flora Family Foundation, and the Africa Foundation, talking about effective philanthropy. In these instances, we are convening and connecting people at the very highest levels in the hopes that they'll leverage their expertise and their knowledge to make a positive impact in the world. And that's where I think we're uniquely positioned and are trying to do cultural stewardship. In the area of philanthropy, to give you one or two examples, while Christie's and our competitors do charity auctions all the time and do make contributions to various causes, we've never really tracked it or measured it, so now we're starting to do that. As an example, in 2013, we donated, conservatively donated $600,000 to various not-for-profit organizations globally. Now, some could say that that's not enough, some could say that's small, but from our perspective, the most important thing is that we now have a baseline measure around which we can have a discussion about what's too small, what's too big. We weren't tracking that in the past, so now we're doing that. Building off of that, in the employee engagement and the volunteerism space, we have started to track how many charity auctions our employees are supporting each year and how many organizations and how much money we're helping to raise through giving up our own time to go out and build these various sales. So in as measures that we've started to be able to report on, for 2000 and for 2012 combined, Christie's raised over $138 million for 600 charities globally. That's a conservative figure, because we're still tracking this in a less than scientific way, but through a series of conversations with people who have the numbers. And then for 2013, we have raised, at half-year point, we had raised $32 million for 150 charities. So I know that number is, I think, double that for the year. But my point is we've started to measure and are having basic key performance indicators, which everyone we've talked to about CSR has told us you need to have your KPIs, because if you're not measuring it, then you can't report on it and can't have a dialogue. The second example under the employee engagement point that I'll share with you is that we were able to, it wasn't a hard sell, but I was able to convince our CEO, Stephen Murphy, to give every full-time employee 8 hours to put towards service in the course of a year. And in so doing, we've been able to also tee up through what we call arts assemblies, which are basically volunteer fairs, in our Hong Kong, London, and New York offices, these gatherings where we brought in the staff members of anywhere from 12 organizations or 8 organizations in Hong Kong to 32 not-for-profit organizations in New York from the art space, organizations such as Prince's Foundation for the Arts or Creative Time Studio in a School, New York Foundation for the Arts, Helping Hands, Hong Kong, and so forth. We brought them in, and in a fun, convivial setting with food and entertainment, we've let our employees during their breaks and coffee time come down and hear from the horse's mouth what they need help with in terms of volunteers. So not only did we tee up the 8 hours of service and made this commitment, a financial commitment in the sense that we're giving employees paid time to go out and do this, but we've also teed up arts organizations, because CSR for Christie's is about art. So we've teed up these organizations to come and connect with our staff. and our staff are very talented, inspired, hardworking, and skilled in the arts arena. So we felt that they would be well served to be with these organizations, and many of them have, and it's been very exciting. In the first half of the year, we registered over 1,200 hours were donated or given by our employees between late August and December. And again, that's conservatively tracked, but it's a key performance indicator we're able to use. We have a partner we work with called Volunteer Match. Many of you may know. They allow us to lightly track where our employees are giving their time, so we can now say that in any given year, X number of employees have given Y number of hours to Z number of organizations for a professional value of fill in the blank. And we believe that with that baseline measure from 2013, we'll be able to move the meter further in 2014. And then the last area, the fourth, the sustainability piece, I will just give you an example of some of the things we've done, and then we can open it up to questions. We have tried to bring together on a monthly basis our heads of facilities and operations in the three regions, Hong Kong, London, and New York, our main hubs, and getting them to talk to each other and start to get basic measures together. So what is probably best in practice, most multinational, best practice in most multinational corporations, we've been a little bit slower on, but we're getting there, which is just getting basic measures on our water, waste, recycling, electric use, and miles flown. And we're almost, we've almost crunched numbers, and we'll be able to put in our first annual report, which will come out sometime in March, where we are on that. So again, we have a key performance indicator, a baseline measure, at which point we can start to make some group decisions here about what we want to improve upon. So let me pause there. There have been lots and lots and lots of other things my colleagues and I have been up to, but I'm really interested in hearing your collective reaction and questions, and let me turn it back to Rochelle.
Thank you so much, Toby. That was very interesting. So now it seems that you guys are really taking a, as you said, baseline and measure approach to your CSR. Although, you know, Christy has been, quote, unquote, practicing CSR for, what is it, 250 years, I think, yep. Said in the yep. CSR report. Yeah. So what has instigated this more approach specifically for Christie's?
Mm-hmm. I would say it's two things. One, it's kind of in the air. I think that you Bard students are really ahead of the curve, and Eben is a fantastic leader in getting Bard to this juncture, because my observation, I'm 51 years of age, I've worked in multinational corporations, I said earlier, American Express, the New York Times Company, and even in a digital consulting firm called Razorfish back in the internet go-go days. The best practices for multinational corporations for well over a decade now has been to really make a serious commitment to CSR, to define it, and to be out there with it and talk about it and be challenged by it, because it's going to where consumers make their decisions. It's going to increasingly influence the decision making of consumers about where they choose to spend their money, where recruits want to go and work. And frankly, it's where the world has to go in my mind, because if we don't start to really get into this sort of social innovation aspect of CSR fosters, then our goose is cooked. So I think that it's just in the air. And I would also say that my CEO is, he recognized the importance of it, and he recognized how it was a subset of what I've been doing in my career anyway. Typically, the CSR will often roll up in corporations under the head of corporate affairs or corporate communications or public affairs. So he tapped me for that, and I'm grateful for that. And so those two things are kind of what got us to this point.
Thank you. So I read a study recently talking about CSR is important only as much as it's publicized. For example, there were two oil spills, the Valdez, and then in 1987, one in Galveston Bay, but no one heard about the one in Galveston Bay, and that oil company didn't get any repercussion in their stock price, for example. So related to that, how does Christie's go about with a proper PR platform to talk about your CSR?
Mm-hmm. Well, interestingly, you're the answer to that. I actually don't, from what I've talked to with a lot of practitioners of CSR, and what I believe instinctively is that the best CSR is not that which companies talk about their CSR. Rather, it's when others say that the company is doing the right thing, broadly speaking. So I'm not really about, and I'm not recommending to my company that we publicize in any direct or formal way what we're up to. Rather, I think these kinds of dialogues with peers or people who are predisposed to want to have the conversation is where we go, because that's how we can really have an apolitical and I think efficient and effective conversation about how to make it stronger and the innovations or the results that we're aiming to achieve more effective. That said, I do think that annual reports are an important thing as well. I've got, with Caitlin's help, we're putting together our first one, and it'll be initially publicized on our intranet, but I'm writing it with the intent that it can be shared with people, at least on a reactive basis, but I'd like to think proactively we will put that on our corporate site after the CEO and legal and others have blessed it, because that's the transparency piece we have to bring in. I would also just note that it's going to be light compared to what you've probably read in a lot of the corporations you deal with, and light means maybe 8 to 12 slides and some very basic highline KPIs that we report on, and an overview of what we've been up to. But that's a start. Everyone that we've spoken to with from Barclays and Bank of America and American Express, PepsiCo, they've all said, you know, the GRI measures, which you're probably all familiar with, are great, but Christie's is not publicly traded. We're not manufacturing. They ask us often, like, why are you doing this? And we're doing it because we believe it's the right thing to do. But because we don't have to do it, it makes it a little bit easier for us in terms of the reporting piece. But I'm trying to get in the pattern or the practice of reporting on our CSR because, again, it's how I can educate my colleagues about what we've been up to some degree educate outside folks what we've been up to, and give us baseline measures to improve upon. And if for whatever reason legislation required it, or we were bought, or we went public, and we needed to be more transparent and more accountable, I want to have that exercised practice in place. So so I think that the annual report becomes an important way to do a little bit of PR, but it's really not so much about PR as it is about just having that transparency and that accountability.
Sure, definitely. I know sustainable business students like myself will appreciate just having more information out there about CSR, especially for privately run companies. It's really difficult to get that kind of data. So that's a good thing to start embarking on, definitely. So one of the things that makes your CSR platform so unique, I would say, is the arts factor, the arts advocacy, and your cultural stewardship. You also are located in New York, and I'm just curious, I have a lot of friends who are active in the arts, but it's getting quite hard to maintain a living in New York City, where it's very expensive. Are you thinking of embarking on any initiatives that would focus on locally derived arts? You said in Beijing and in India, are there any kinds of things here in New York City?
We are involved with so many cultural institutions. I, for example, on the board of New York Foundation for the Arts, which funds artists at critical junctures in their careers to the tune of, you know, $500,000. So it does provide studio space and educates them on the business of art, because a lot of artists are not as well prepared for that. So we do boot camps. So we're not, Christie's is not doing boot camps for artists or providing gallery space, but what we are doing is through our employees getting out and involved with organizations such as NYFA or Creative Time, Studio in the School. We're getting into the communities in which we live and work and trying to share, I guess I would describe it as in-kind services, because quite frankly, our budgets are very limited. We have a big brand, $7 billion approximately in sales last year, but our margins are quite thin, and much of what we do in terms of promotion and events is generally through sponsorships. We find partners because of the power of our brand, where a lot of people want to affiliate with it. So we're able to find smart partnerships, but it's through in-kind services that we provide to not-for-profit organizations, and I think generally just bringing, shining a light on art and culture, that we play a really a valuable role. And then we also work in any number of ways with cultural institutions, primarily visual arts organizations because of the nature of who we are and what we do. But, you know, every top flight museum in the New York area we work with in various ways, either helping them with their collections and buying and selling to invest more in their arts that they acquire, or doing, you know, I can't tell you how many tables we do at various dinners for MoMA or Met or whatnot. And then I have an organization I started 8 years ago called ArtsCom, which is a quarterly gathering of the chief communications officers of all the top flight cultural institutions in New York, from Carnegie Hall, Morgan Library, 92nd Street Y, Lincoln Center, Met, MoMA, Guggenheim, so forth. And we come together on a quarterly basis to talk about the issues of promoting and advancing culture to the next generation of culture seekers. Now, those organizations are more directly involved with the artists, whereas Christie's as an auction house is typically what we call a secondary market. The primary market is the galleries who sell or represent artists. And then when those works go into collections and then come back on the market the second time, that's what the secondary market is. So we're not, while our employees are very involved with artists because of the nature of their work, we're not typically working for an artist or working with them in our daily sort of formal sense. So it's through museum relationships that we'll often have relationships with artists or be able to advocate for them. And ArtsCom is just one way in which we get to know what the needs and concerns are of artists and who's coming up in that world and how we can shine a light. There's a it's always interesting to see which artists are exhibiting at the various museums at a moment in time, because that usually bodes well for their prices at auction, frankly. If you have a MoMA retrospective or a Guggenheim retrospective, it suggests that collectors are going to want to have you in their collection. But for those aspiring artists who are not quite at that MoMA or Guggenheim retrospective point yet, again, it's sort of the in-kind services that our colleagues will provide through organizations like New York Foundation for the Arts or Creative Time and Studio School that we try to help.
Interesting. Go ahead. Sorry.
Rochelle, let me jump in here for a second. So if you're joining the call, you're on Sustainable Business Fridays with the Bard MBA in Sustainability. We're talking with Toby Yuznik, who is the director of the new CSR program at Christie's, and talking about the genesis of that program. This is a first and last Fridays event, Sustainable Business Fridays. And next week, next Friday, we're going to be speaking with Dave Palaskas, who is the head of VP for Corporate Sustainability at General Motors. And Dave is going to be talking about Going from Good to Great. That's the title of his talk. And then at the end of March, we have Dave Stangus from Campbell Soup, who is also head of sustainability there, and will be talking about their work in the food sector. So we're going from art to vehicles to food in the course of a month, and really interesting to see how different sectors are going to be approaching this question of kind of moving beyond a single bottom line. And Toby, I'm just want to ask you one question, which is, it seems like you've had this really kind of unique experience of actually being asked to start. Mm-hmm. And that, as you said, it involved a lot of talking, a lot of conversation with other people in other organizations, but also in particular with your people, and identifying the pillars that are going to be the foundation of your CSR program, then moving on really just to measure what you've been doing and characterize that and kind of shine a light on that for everyone so that they understand the progress that you've actually made. So then that begs the next step, which is, you know, and you mentioned that you thought that the reporting on this would be a bit light relative to public companies. Do you see Christie's really being able to sort of really integrate kind of social and environmental concerns into their core business, or is this always going to be sort of a bit bolted on in terms of doing these other things as well to support the core business, but, you know, sustainability somehow is never going to replace, I don't know how the word would be, but I guess my question is, you've built this platform, where does it go from here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's absolutely intended, and I think we're already getting to the point that not peripheral. But I think that that's a question that all serious businesses need to ask themselves, not once, but on an ongoing basis. Are we really integrating this into our business, or are we just sort of paying lip service to it or sort of inconsistently applying it? So in so doing, we're trying to really – now that we've got the mission, the vision, the four pillars and traction in all those areas, we're not resting on our laurels. To the contrary, we're continuing to campaign, and that's where it gets really exciting. Campaign in for plan, now with conversations like today, even a little bit externally. The campaign is where you get the dialogue and where you can find out ways where you might want to course correct or where you want to amp things up even more. I have found that in the past year, the most effective communications are those that are one-on-one or in small groups where you can really leave with someone a one- or two-page summary but also have the dialogue. And in so doing, I've been talking to, for example, our proposals team. Whenever we go into a pitch for a piece of business, it's often very competitive with Sotheby's, who's our biggest rival, but there are other auction houses. And there are galleries who will also want to sometimes get in on what we're selling, that the proposals team is fundamental to our success in winning business. And so having the proposals team in London, Hong Kong, and New York understand CSR and how it can and does relate to the clients or the potential clients that we're pitching will only make us more effective in getting those proposals in shape. So, for example, we had a pitch this year to a major hotel chain, which is controlled by a very wealthy family. And we made it a point to research their CSR program and to figure out where it dovetails with our own CSR program. And in that formal proposal, acknowledges a subset of the various topics under discussion, CSR and how we believe that, not only do we believe in CSR, but we see how it could help dovetail with their company and the sale of this particular work of art. The important thing there, I think, is twofold. One, it signifies from the outset to this company and the people that run it that we understand CSR, we believe in CSR, we talk the same language. And when you're doing business, it really helps when you're talking the same business, the same language. And two, it allows people to think more broadly about everyone coming to that conversation, allows people to think more broadly about that transaction so that it's really more than just a transaction. It's a relationship builder, right? You can win the piece of business and sell the picture and then move on, or you can be more top of mind in each other's minds because you've talked about ideas and core beliefs, and then also done the transaction, and everyone feels good about not only having achieved the transaction, but having a sort of similar world view or a shared world view about more than just the transaction. So that becomes potentially really powerful stuff. I've also found that with the volunteerism piece that we are focusing on all of our employees, but the ones we really engage with are the ones who are almost predisposed to want to volunteer time, who want to care about arts advocacy, who who want to put more meaning in their daily lives and define meaning however one wants, but it's apparent to me that, and this is again where you even and the students are, I think, ahead of the curve, in anticipating where the market's headed, people are going to make meaning in their lives. It doesn't almost matter what the meaning is, it's just important for brands and companies to realize that if people are going to be making meaning with their lives, the transactions, where they choose to live, where they choose to work, where they choose to send their kids to school, where they choose to buy because it's vegan friendly or it's carbon neutral or whatever, that meaning that they're making is something for the brands to say, all right, we want to be a part of that meaning making. We want to be a part of that dialogue. Those companies, I believe, those brands who are facilitating, enabling, being a part of that meaning making are the ones that are going to have the competitive advantage going forward. So to have our employees who are interested in making meaning, putting up their hands and saying, yeah, I'll go and give some time to, as an example, two of our employees gave time to New York Foundation for the Arts, not because I'm on the board, but because they met them during the volunteer fair and wanted to get involved. And they went down and spent time at the NYFA offices, and they were able to reassemble two portfolios that had been gifted to NYFA in the 80s and had been disassembled, and no one knows exactly what the genesis of it was or what had happened. But they were able to reassemble it because of their unique skills and knowledge and expertise. And NYFA was able to put one into, they're offering one to a permanent collection of a top flight museum, which would be great if it happens, because then you can say generously donated by New York Foundation for the Arts in a very high profile way. And then the other one they were able to put on sale in on their e-commerce platform. So there's this virtuous cycle that's been created because you're taking people with passion and expertise outside of their day job, putting it to work for a great cause, and helping that organization raise its visibility and some money, and then they want to come back and do more. That's the perfect situation, and it's allowing our colleagues, the volunteers, to exercise their leadership skill, become brand ambassadors, and make a difference in a way that, you know, there's only so many job promotions and salary increases and titles you can give an employee, and they're not that frequent. And so if you can find other ways to let people share their knowledge or expertise and grow their leadership skills, then you've really found excess capacity in a time when most people are feeling tapped and exhausted and underappreciated. So from the volunteerism piece to this, the proposal section, I'm seeing the integrated approach is the way to go.
That's a terrific answer. If you'd like to ask Toby Usnick of Christie's a question, you can hit *5 on your phone, *5 on your phone, and that will enable us to enable you to ask a question. And Rochelle, back to you. Oh, I'll just a second. Now back to you.
Thank you. I have so many questions because it's all so very interesting. Thank you, Toby, for your viewpoint and your work on this. I'm curious, when you started to take a survey of other companies who are doing CSR to better inform your CSR initiatives, did the conversation about arts advocacy or, you know, their companies working on arts at all come up in that interaction?
It varied. I'll tell you that one of the more significant outside conversations I had was when we were in pretty good shape with the mission, the vision, and the map that we had in mind. The mission statement then read, to enhance the communities in which we live and work through cultural stewardship. Right? And then I sat down with John Bowser, who was the head of the chief communications officer for the Humane Society of the United States. So I'm very involved with them. I'm on an advisory council there. I've rescued several Death Russell Terriers in Rhinebeck, so it's just an interesting area for me. But John, because of his communications background, because he represents the largest voice for animal advocacy in the United States, I thought, let's run it by him. And he said, well, you know, to enhance the communities in which we live and work through cultural stewardship is fine, it's great, but he said, what do you stand for? And that's when we added it, a light bulb went off over my head, and that's when I realized the arts advocacy piece. Because to sell and transact in art is one thing, but to actually advocate, to try and give access to art, to try and demystify it, to have our volunteers get out and show young people the way, to have people who are in this city who are within a mile of the greatest cultural collections in the world intimidated or not have a guide, a guru, someone to demystify it or show them the way is a huge opportunity for us to advocate for art. And I really do believe that in that kind of advocacy, it's not going to happen overnight, but we start small and we have one, two, or five Christie's employees who are showing typically an inner city kid who doesn't have the means or the invitation to go to an institution like the Metropolitan Museum and experience art and fall in love with art, that by facilitating that, those colleagues are then going to allow that young person to go in 10, 15, 20 years to be where you are now and to be getting their master's degree or even their PhD in history, art history, to really bring diversity to the market, to really change lives in a way that is long-term a fantastic social investment. And quite frankly, even if that didn't pan out, it's wonderful to me to know that my colleague didn't waste their time because they've tried and in some ways have made the world a better place, even if it doesn't lead to that great diversification of the art market over time. But I actually happen to believe that it will.
Wonderful. Yeah, I can definitely sympathize that as a lover of the arts and a lucky New Yorker myself. But I'm curious, the arts market, do you think that that market will see expansion in future years? I know with mass media and a lot of it being tied to advertising instead, a lot of, you know, art-centric students are you know, at a loss for careers in the field. But do you think that it might be otherwise, maybe in the fine arts?
I actually, as a company, and I personally are very bullish on the art market and on its future. We're seeing incredible growth globally. I think that the excitement is that nobody has a crystal ball and knows exactly where it's going to go. I think that there's just been an unprecedented global increase in the appreciation of art and design, so that people, you know, I often joke with people that when I was a kid, if you had a lunchbox, it was probably, I don't know, you'd have Snoopy or something on it. But you could actually have lunchboxes today that would have a Warhol on it, because there is the globality of Warhol. There's just there's this greater awareness today about, you know, a Koons puppy or a Damien Hirst spin painting or a Kusama polka dotted dress. So there's just an increased awareness and appreciation for art and design. The fun of it, I think, for the artists and actually for all of us is throwing ourselves into it with a belief in it without necessarily knowing where it all takes us, because I think there continue to be opportunities for artists to thrive, multimedia, in ways that we can't even envision today. So, yeah, we're very bullish on it, and I'm sort of excited to see where.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've been a leader at in terms of the sustainability side. You started the Green Auction with Susan Rockefeller. Do you get much sort of natural traction around thinking about the footprint of the company and trying to reduce emissions and its overall environmental impact of the business? I mean, in some ways, you're a recycling business, so, you know, that's a good thing, right?
I'm sure it wasn't a pun when you said natural traction with sustainability, but we are, again, as with the volunteerism, we're heartily embracing those who are predisposed to get the message and working with them, and the others, we just figure it's going to take more time. It's spotty. It depends on where and what we're talking about vis-a-vis sustainability. As an example, we're a tenant at Rockefeller Center. Tishman Speyer is our landlord, so much of our waste is actually ultimately transported, or the contracts are done through our landlord. So we've been told through the years, because we all have waste baskets under our desks, that, you know, everything is sorted and you don't need to worry about recycling in our offices because it's taken care of. but we wanted to challenge that because it's hard for any consumer today to really believe that or accept that, because at home we're all separating things ourselves, hopefully. So Caitlin and I actually did go out to Queens to our sorting facility and did a sort of an Instagram type pictorial that showed the life cycle of garbage from Christie's. And sure enough, it all is handpicked. We were there with our hard hats and saw it all happening. And we can claim, I don't remember the exact figure, but I think right now something like it's over 80% of our waste in the New York facilities are recycled. So that is going to become one of those KPIs that we can report out to our colleagues this year in our annual report, and then we can start to improve upon. But in advance of even getting that figure out, we were able to do that Instagram sort of story in our internal newsletter so that employees could actually see without having to go themselves that, in fact, they can feel okay about how we're treating our waste here. So it's small steps like that. We are just getting our first global measure of miles flown. We don't do carbon offsetting. Some employees do it on their own, but we haven't yet thrown down that challenge or suggested that. You just reminded me, Eben, another thing that we've done, and it goes back to the earlier question about integrating into the business model. With the green auction that you cited, we did this for 3 years. It was designed to be a 3-year commitment. We had 4 environmental groups, NRDC, Central Park Conservancy, Oceana, and Conservation International, be the recipients of monies that we raised through an environmental auction. And that auction was a huge success in so many ways, but it was carbon neutral. We did everything with digital catalogs. Everything was carbon offset, recycled paper, organic, locally sourced and organic foods that we provided. And that we did for 3 years, and that is something that we can now when we're ready for prime time. We haven't done this yet, but we are ready to be able to claim, I believe, that if you, the heir of a great art collection, want to sell it and you want it to be a carbon neutral sale, that we Christie's not only hypothetically could do it, we have in fact done it and could make that a competitive advantage for the sale of your family's collection. So there's some things that are further off in the future, some things that we're already doing, and still lots and lots of work to do. But that's the fun part of creating something from scratch. You get a baseline measure, and then it's probably nowhere but up.
And do you think you're going to start getting requests like that?
I'm not going to even wait for the request. I mean, if you think about the fact that I've just mentioned it in this conversation, I think that some people on the call might go back and mention it to their friends and family, and that might matter. So I think subtly there are ways to get that fact out, and then I think some people will start to come at us with that.
So,
someone's got to put their phone on mute.
Yeah, I don't, Rochelle, I don't know if that's you, but it's back to you.
Okay. Great. Yeah, I think that's a wise choice considering younger generations are especially more aware of carbon neutrality and those kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other specific competitive advantages you're excited about exploring in terms of the CSR and the sustainable components?
Well, let me think about that. It's an interesting question. I suspect there are many. It's kind of the beauty of CSR is if you're doing it, and it's a hackneyed expression, but if you're doing it authentically, then it does tend to have a reverberating effect. It tends to grow. So I think if we can do more of the same in this coming year, it's only going to grow and become more more a part of who we are individually and collectively, and that will lead to not only stronger and better relationships, but it will also lead to more business. And I think that the best part is it will lead to a better world because we will be more informed and making more informed decisions, and hopefully those that have less dire impact leave less of a negative impact on the planet and on relationships and more positive ones. you know, there's a story that's coming out this month in our issue of Christie's Magazine, and it's about philanthropists who've achieved their philanthropic mission solely through transacting with our sale room. So where the CSR piece comes in is twofold. One, there's money that's been raised and it's going to great causes, and I'll share some examples in a second. And two, we're writing about their sales after the fact. So, for example, collectors like Lily Safra sold a bunch of jewelry last year for an organization called Jewels for Hope, and it benefited 20 different organizations. About 6 years ago, a collector in Seattle named Janet Ketchum sold a Freud picture with us and raised about $18 million, and all of that money went to building schools in Afghanistan and educating tens of thousands of young Afghanistani girls. In 2006, I think it was, Robert Tsao in Taiwan sold a brush pot in our Hong Kong sales and gave all the proceeds to Sichuan earthquake relief efforts. So I think by shining that light on those people after they've transacted, it shows that we are relationship people. We're not simply transactionally oriented. And their philanthropy has, in fact, made the world a better place. And that patterning of that behavior is possible because we're writing about it in the magazine, we're talking about it, and frankly, we're fortunate the people that we deal with, generally speaking, have the means and the desire to make a difference, and they have the experience oftentimes in doing it. So that's the most exciting piece of where this can all go, that knock-on effect, that ripple effect. If we're really integrating CSR into our business, if we're really getting our folks familiar with it and understanding the impact of their activities and our collective activities, and we're just more mindful, then I think it's a win-win-win all around. So challenge me on that. If you don't have time today, email me, call me. But I really do believe in it.
Quickly, Toby, is Sotheby's also advancing a CSR strategy?
No, not that I'm aware of. They do and have for decades, as we have, charity auctions, and they write philanthropic dollars, and I suspect they have someone in their facilities team that's thinking about recycling, but they haven't yet, as far as I know, made an organized effort to commit to CSR, which is interesting in that they're publicly traded and we're not. So I would have thought there'd be more of an interest for them to do so. But I don't think that will be the case for long. I think that, again, all businesses need to become more aware about their activities and call it CSR, call it sustainability, call it social innovation. It's the concept that really matters, and I don't see any competitive business not going this way. And, again, tipping my hat to you, Eamon, I think that you and your students are the ones that are really at an advantage to have these kinds of conversations and this kind of training at this juncture, because the world's going to need you.
Well, that's a really good place to get close to ending. We were coming up to the top of the hour, and we've been talking with Toby Usnick, who has launched a new CSR initiative at Christie's, and if Sotheby's does one in the next year or two, Toby, you can take some credit for that, I think. next week, we're going to be talking with Dave Tolaskis, who is the VP for Sustainability at General Motors Corporation. And can a car company reinvent itself around sustainability? How far can that go? So that's going to be a great conversation. So join us Friday at noon next week. And then at the end of the month, end of March, we'll be talking with Dave Stangus from Campbell Soup about their leadership in the food industry. So great conversations coming up. Rochelle, do you have just some last thoughts or for Toby? And then Toby will just give you the opportunity to just send us out. Okay. Or last question, Rochelle.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to let you know, Toby, that your talk about, you know, really making these aspects part of the company, something we learned recently, that there's five stages of sustainability integration into businesses. And it sounds like your efforts are taking your business from a 3-stage to a 4-stage, where sustainability is integrated into the company DNA, not only while you're around, but for hopefully the extenuation of the company. So I'd just like to thank you very much for your time. It's really fascinating. And if you ever need any help, us Bard MBA students are happy to lend any skills in that arena. So thank you again.
Well, thank you, Rochelle, and thank you, Eben. And I will say Marin has the leg up on the Bard students here because she's already here.
Of course.
I would say that really my only closing thought with you, and I say this, as I mentioned earlier, a 51-year-old man who's kind of been around the block. I'm an optimist by nature. I will tell you that the fun part of this position was that it dovetailed with my turning 50. And when you turn 50, I guess somehow we're supposed to ask those big questions like what's it all about and where is it all going. And I would say that that was the beauty that my company was asking me, in my mind, my company was asking me at the same time as I was asking myself, what's it all about? In other words, what do we stand for? We stand for art. We advocate for it, and we believe in it. And for me personally, you know, what do I stand for? And for me, I was able to distill that down to discovery, lifelong discovery, and making a difference. So I would just leave that closing thought with you all to ask yourselves on an ongoing basis, but perhaps now for those of you in particular who are graduating, what do you stand for? Because the more you know who you are and what you stand for, the sooner and more easily you're going to get wherever it is you need to get in your careers. And it will all make sense in the rearview mirror, but I find that that's a good meta question to ask oneself in thinking about the big issues in life and where one's headed. So thank you all.
Well, thank you, Toby. Thank you, Rochelle, for leading the conversation. And please join us next week for more on Sustainable Business Fridays. If you'd like more information about the Bard's program, just drop us an email, mba@bard.edu. Thanks again, Toby, and Rochelle.
Bye, guys.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.